special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
It's your host here, James Bell, coming in live for the newest episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. And you could press 1 to talk live on the show. Just been having a few difficulties here, so I'm just trying to catch up with a few things here. In the meantime, I'm gonna play a quick commercial break while I try to fix a few things here and there, and then we'll get right at it. Bear with me for a few moments while I get things situated, and we'll be able to talk boxing here in a little bit. You are listening live on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida, great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
All right, here we are back at it. And you pretty much, had a slow weekend this weekend. In reference to the sport of boxing, nothing on the major networks that kind of cover the sport. People are pretty much looking forward to what's in store next weekend at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, as you have the, I would say, the quote-unquote crossroads fight between Adrian the Problem Broner and Mikey Garcia. This fight is pretty much in and around the 140-pound division, and that this is kind of a crossroads fight between these two fighters. One is pretty much, trying to get back in the thick of things and, is undefeated with Mikey Garcia, and Adrian Broner, has two losses on his record, of course, losing to Sean Porter and Marcus Maidana in the 147-pound division. But, has had, some success here in the 140-pound division, defeating Adrian Granados in his last fight, but that fight between him and Granados wasn't quite, up to some people's expectations in reference to those that kind of follow Adrian the Problem Broner. And so now they have this matchup between him and Mikey Garcia to kind of like decide where both fighters are in this point of their careers. And this is something that, I'm kind of like split. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say split, but, once this fight was announced, I kind of, sided towards Mikey Garcia to win this fight. I'm thinking that he's at the point of his career where he hasn't necessarily reached the highest of his abilities and what he could do inside of the ring. Yes, he did have, a long layoff at one point, and, he had a couple of fights, right after his long layoff against, guys that, are not necessarily up to the level of Mikey Garcia. But now he's, here against Adrian Broner, somebody that has a lot of abilities, but also a few flaws that kind of keep him back a little bit. And so now we're going to see if, either one of these fighters is, able to show if their skills are good enough to beat the other. I feel that there is a lot more on the line for Adrian Broner in this case than Mikey Garcia. Not just because of the two losses that he has on his record, but as far as consideration for bigger and better fights for him, this is the breaking point. He had somewhat of a crossroads fight against Sean Porter, and while Sean Porter was basically beating him for most of the fight, it wasn't something that was an overwhelming victory for Porter. But I would say that this is something here where you kind of like couldn't be able to gauge where Adrian Broner is at the point of his career, if he's able to beat somebody with the ability of Mikey Garcia. Mikey Garcia is like a former, champion in lower divisions. He's, been held in high regard, by a lot of fighters and boxing analysts alike. So this is something here where I think that this is going to, put Garcia in the point where he's going to be able to, get bigger fights. Like I said, he's already had, Mikey Garcia's already had like 36 fights in his career. I mean, he's been in the game for a while, since, 2006. And, he's, defeated the likes of, Robinson Castellanos and Carlos Rivera, and, won minor and major titles, like I was saying before, at featherweight. And He was able to go from featherweight to super featherweight to win the title there, and plus, you know, win the lightweight title earlier this year against Dejan Zatakainen, who was undefeated before facing Mikey Garcia. But, you know, now he's going to go from lightweight to super lightweight to challenge Adrian Broner, you know, who's at 33-2 at this point. And it's like I'm saying here, Garcia is a, you know, very talented fighter, and Adrian Broner is also a very talented fighter, but it's basically going to be a, you know, I would say a battle of wills. I don't think, I mean, we know where Adrian Broner is at the point of his career, you know, very flashy, but, you know, not somebody that overwhelms you. I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily overwhelms you. Kind of has his own pace to how he fights, how he throws his punches, where he throws his punches, and how he moves. But he's not like a guy that is, I would say, up on his feet, so to speak. He's kind of, I would say, flat-footed or linear in his movements. So, to me, I mean, I think that that might be something that Mike Garcia could work to his advantage for this fight coming up on Saturday. And that is pretty much why I've kind of like sided towards Mike Garcia, you know, at this point here for winning this fight. And for him to, you know, stay undefeated and kind of either, you know, stay there in the super lightweight division, try to look in the super lightweight division, or, you know, move back down to 135. I mean, there could be, you know, other fights for him there within 140. Of course, you know, we have a big fight there for the major, all of the major titles, you know, on the line as, you know, Terrence Crawford goes up against Julius Ndongo. But, I mean, you still have, you know, the likes of Francis Bartholomew in that division. You have Victor Postol in that division. You have, you know, Amir Imam looking for a big fight in that division as well. So that, you know, Mikey Garcia can be able to try his luck at 140. But, you know, at 135, there's, you know, a lot of possibilities there. Like I said, he was, you know, he was lightweight champion, WBC lightweight champion at 135. You have, you know, Jorge Linares there, Robert Easter Jr. there, Flanagan, you know, Corolla. Also within that division, Richard Comey, which would be a, you know, a fight there that would be a statement fight, but, you know, something that, you know, people may be able to watch there to see a good, you know, a pretty good action fight. You know, as Comey is pretty tough, as we saw with this fight against Robert Easter Jr. So he would have a lot of possibilities, well, more possibilities than 135, I would think, than at 140. Well, on the flip side, Adrian Broner, he would, I'm not sure what he would do at 140, because it's not that, you know, he would, you know, accept a few fights at 140. It's just that he's at the point where I'm not sure if he really wants to fight more for the titles than for money, as he is more of he's more of a marketable fighter to the general public than Mikey Garcia is. And with that being known, his aim is that he wants to see if he can get bigger fights on the, you know, general market than just those that'll, you know, kind of be there for fight fans. I mean, a Terrence Crawford fight would be, you know, a very attractive fight if Crawford is able to get past Ndongo, but, you know, I'm not sure if that fight can be made or not. He would have a lot more possibilities at 147. It's just that, you know, when he had that loss to, you know, Sean Porter, that kind of like put him, you know, on the list of 147-pound fighters as somebody that is below where Sean Porter is in the rankings of 147. So he would have to work towards getting above that at some point. You know, attractive fights that will be out there on the horizon for him at 147 is like Danny Garcia, Lamont Peterson, among others. But, you know, at this point, he just has to be able to get past this fight first here between him and Michael Garcia. Just coming in here live, it's area code 205. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on? James, this is Mike Grady. How you doing?
Doing good here, Brother Mike. You know, went through a little bit here with this fight between Adrian Broner and Mikey Garcia. And I was saying that I kind of like favor Mikey Garcia in this one-on-one matchup. I mean, Adrian Broner has, like, a lot to offer as far as, like, in-ring abilities. But to me, his kind of flaws is he kind of gets hit too much for my liking. And that he doesn't move his feet very well. And with a guy, against a guy like of Mikey Garcia's ability, that can't really work all too well. This whole thing about, you know, how he's training, how he's been able to, you know, get around or come close to the weight is one thing. But, you know, once he gets to the ring, you got to be able to see when he gets to the ring. It's like his tendencies in the ring stays the same regardless of, you know, what he's been able to do during training. So that's why I'm favoring Mikey Garcia at this point.
Yeah, I actually don't have a prediction on this because I haven't honestly watched Mikey Garcia enough to give an intelligent take on the fight. I do.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen like a couple of Mikey Garcia's fights. Don't get me wrong, but I haven't like actually critiqued him. You know, I haven't like really given him a real critique. So I don't know his tendencies to say whether or not, like, he – well, let me ask you this. Does Mikey Garcia – like, how many punches per round do you think he outputs? Is he more of a, you know, a steady, busy fighter? Or is he, like, a mix? Because I know some fights he does look pretty intelligent, but then other fights I see him where he seems to outman his fighter and then he just let his hands go and then, you know – they can't, like, get away from him throwing his hand. So, because if he is a busy fighter, then definitely that does not bode well for Adrian Broner. And no matter, you know, kind of what Broner does, if he's a busy fighter, that's not going to bode well. But then again, if he's, like, not a very strong fighter, then you lead into, say, like, the fight where he went, you know, the whole fight with the guy, it was a black guy, and then at the end, he ended up uppercutting the guy, and then that's pretty much how he, like, won the fight. I forgot the guy's name. But it'll be,
yeah,
if he's like that, it'll be a back-and-forth fight. But so what you think?
Well, I mean, I'd say that, you know, Garcia is, you know, semi-paced. You know, he's around that 60 to 65 punches, you know, thrown, I would say. So he kind of, you know, he kind of paces himself a little bit. But it's something where he's kind of, you know, looking for, you know, any weaknesses in his opponent. But he doesn't, like, you know, throw a lot to get to a point where he's able to, you know, to try to get something, you know, while throwing a lot. You know, it's not like a level of a, you know, like a Paul Williams would kind of like throw 100 punches around or something like that. So he kind of paces himself pretty well in most of his fights.
But does he, like, when he does throw his punches, is he like an accurate fighter? Say like a, I mean, I know he's not like super defensive, like a Rigondeaux or something like that, or, you know, Mayweather.
Right.
But is his efficiency pretty high? Or does he throw away like a few throwaway punches just to get the one good punch in?
Well, he kind of, I would say, like he's around the 35% range, 35 to 40% range overall. Like for example, his fight against Orlando Salido, he was able to, you know, get to that I would say that 40% connect percentage. Over 50% connected in power punches. But he threw like, you know, it says like he threw about 190 jabs within like 8 rounds, between him and Orlando Salido, back in 2013. So, he's able to be like fairly, you know, fairly active or something like that, but not something where he's throwing, you know, about 70 plus punches around or anything like that. He doesn't really do that.
Yeah, and I know he won against Salido, but how did he win the fight?
That was like a TKO win.
Okay. Well, I mean, and that's probably when Salido was probably doing something too, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, he's doing something now, but he was probably more dangerous then.
Yeah, because that was, you know, 4 years ago. So, you know, this is, before everything went down after that. But, I mean, he still had that win against, you know, Lomachenko, you know, after this. But, he was still in it. Basically in the second half of his career here, when he went up against Mikey Garcia.
I'm listening. Mikey Garcia, what now?
No, my thing was is that, you know, with Adrian Broner is that, you know, it's fairly a crossroads fight for him, because, you know, if he can't really do something to beat a Mikey Garcia, then, you know, he wouldn't be matched up, or he might not fare well against, you know, other higher ranked guys in the 140, 147 pound division there. So he's got to get through this particular fight to immediately get those shots against the other 140 pound or 147 pound fighters. There, but it's almost like he's trying to, you know, match himself up with higher profile guys, but not necessarily, you know, do the things that he needs to do in order to, you know, either attract himself to fight those guys or to, you know, kind of be favored against those guys. And while there's some that kind of like favor him here in this fight against Mikey Garcia, it's not that, you know, it's an overwhelming amount of people that favor him against Mikey Garcia. It's a 50-50 fight.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that Adrian Broner does have going for him too is that the dude is a tough dude. You could see that with mm-hmm. the Chino fight. He, you know, like, he bit down, you know, and he definitely finished the fight, in my opinion, stronger than Maidana did. But,
yeah.
I mean, it just kind of depends on if Adrian Broner going to let his hands go, too, because if he sit there and always be second, then, yeah, he'll never beat the top-tier guys, even like a B-level tier guy. He won't beat them either. if he just always be second. Like, he got to let his hands go. And, I mean, he definitely has hand speed. He definitely has power. But whether it's combinations, whether it's, you know, whether it's countering, he got to, you know, he just got to let his hands go. And then good stuff will probably happen for him. But then hopefully.
Yeah, he has to be more confident in his offensive skills so that he can throw more against his opponent. It's almost like he's, you know, actively looking for the counterpunch with his stance and how he, you know, kind of like blocks and uses his defense. He's kind of like looking for that counterpunch and then seeing if that counterpunch throws his opponent off, and then he opens up after that instead of, you know, going after the fighter firsthand. I mean, that was very evident in the Granados fight. Granados was, you know, the more active person, the one that was first. He was able to, you know, get in a couple of combos here and there, and that's what, you know, kind of forced that fight to be closer than, you know, a lot of people thought it should have been.
Yeah, but I will tell you what, if Mikey Garcia want to have, like, a good image or view and perception in him winning the fight, he'll have like a pressure style against Adrian Broner, because, you know, it's hard to say a guy didn't win if you're throwing 1.5 times more punches and then, you know, you hitting him more too. And so if he can throw more punches, which means that he'll probably land more punches than what Broner would throw, and I'm assuming that Broner just don't get in like no clean Floyd Mayweather-ish, you know, tight punches, you know, but assuming that he throws more and he's getting the shots off and they landing semi-clean, and Broner ain't like just getting clean shots teeing off on him, then yeah, that typically has been a good recipe for somebody to win against Broner. And I think that Garcia is high profile enough such that they won't just take it away from him just because it's Broner, you know, like compare him to a Pauly Malignaggi, where you could have argued that Malignaggi won that fight.
Yeah, and the thing with the Malignaggi fight was that Malignaggi was very slick and like semi-hard to hit. For Adrian Broner, and so that kind of like, you know, made things a little bit tougher for him in his fight against Pauly Malignaggi. It wasn't, you know, anything where he got smothered or roughed up, but still he wasn't, you know, able to connect a good series of punches against Malignaggi, and Malignaggi was able to, you know, do what he could against Broner to, you know, make that fight close. And that, I think that kind of like ties back to what I was saying, as you know, Broner kind of gets hit a little bit too much for my liking against certain fighters, and that leaves him, you know, very vulnerable here in this fight, you know, between him and Mikey Garcia. Although, you know, Garcia really hasn't been at this weight level before in his career. I mean, I still think he's, you know, very capable of doing damage to Broner if Broner doesn't, you know, keep himself on a swivel, you know, against them. So, I mean, that's like, you know, my initial thoughts here in that upcoming fight. You know, you still have a couple of fights there that are on the undercard. I think they, you know, just added one here on this card. I think it's here where they're going to have Rashe Warren going up against McJoe Arroyo. So that's going to be an additional fight there. That's part of the card. They just added it. We're saying like in a couple of shows they would have had the title fight at 154. That would have had Jared Hurd going up against Austin Trout, but looks like they're pushing that back a little bit to be part of the a super welterweight card. So as a replacement, they added the middleweight fight between George Sebastian Heelan going up against Jermall Charlo. Jermall Charlo moving up from with 154 to 160. You know, already has a position in the WBC middleweight rankings here. So he's going up against George Sebastian Heelan to kind of like solidify his position there in the middleweight rankings and kind of seeing if he could get in to fight either Canelo Alvarez or Gennady Golovkin, whoever wins that middleweight fight in September. So that's one thing to look into. And also, they have the heavyweight fight between Jarrell Big Baby Miller and Gerald Washington. That's going to be something really interesting there in the heavyweight division. You have Jarrell Miller that's ranked in a lot of boxing organizations, WBA, IBF, and WBO, and Gerald Washington, who's, you know, ranked in the WBC, you know, coming off the loss in February to WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder. So this is something here that, you know, I'm kind of like looking into, especially with the side of Jarrell Miller, because Jarrell Miller is, you know, very highly ranked in WBO. I think he's like ranked number two. And this could like catapult him to, you know, being next in line to fight the winner of the Joseph Parker Huey Fury WBO title fight. While Gerald Washington could, you know, basically get back into contention to challenge for any of the other heavyweight titles if he's able to get this win against Jarrell Miller. You know, we've seen what Gerald Washington can do or what he's, you know, able to do here in the heavyweight division. We saw that, you know, in the few rounds against Deontay Wilder. And Jarrell Miller, you know, is there undefeated 18-0-1, pretty much coming up in the ranks. He's had, you know, a couple of, you know, tough fights against Fred Cassidy, who's a tough veteran, among others. But here he's, you know, kind of getting himself up to, you know, moving on up as far as like the level of competition is concerned. So we got to be able to see what he's going to be able to do here against Gerald Washington and seeing if he's going to be successful in this fight. He might, you know, have a, you know, good contingent of fans there with him as he is from Brooklyn. So we're going to see if he'll have a good amount of fans there to support him in this particular fight. What's your thoughts about that Miller-Washington fight there, Brady?
I haven't watched both guys enough to speak on it either, but what I will say, I'm curious if it's going to be the case of, because, you know, Washington started later, right? And
yeah,
even though Washington seems like, I'm going to compare him to Seth something. He was a football player. Seth Mitchell, who had a lot of buzz, was using a lot of power, wasn't very skillful, but you saw he was learning up every fight, but then he got chopped down by Crunk Jim guy, who's training Klitschko now. But so I'm wondering So Banks is a veteran. So I see that, but I was trying to see if it would be a similar case where it's a guy who's been boxing all his life fights against a guy who, you know, started boxing later. And so skillfully throwing more traps, you know, just skip, like, kind of like the fight last week or whatever between Joe Smith and Sullivan Barrera. You know, I'm wondering if it'll be that type of, you started later and I'm just technically better than you. But since Gerald Miller is kind of young in the game, I'm wondering if he, you know, like, if he's not as skillful, is he as skillful? Like, did he make the Olympics?
I'm not sure. I didn't think he did.
Okay, so, I mean, Well, I mean, I would have been like, oh, if he made the Olympics, then you kind of know he's got some kind of skill to him. But yeah, with all that being said, I think it should be a competitive fight. And if nobody is just like head over here smarter than the next man as far as boxing IQ goes, it should be some fireworks thrown. But I think Washington's temperament ain't going to be necessarily fireworks being thrown. He's going to probably try to box and, you know.
Yeah.
But he can't have no brain lessons like he kind of did against Wilder, because it's just kind of like he went to sleep and then got slept. That's what happened.
Well, yeah, I mean, he kind of like, you know, got dropped in there. He was, you know, basically, you know, kind of like, I would say, mellow in his fight against Deontay Wilder, you know, pacing himself, so to speak. You know, he was kind of confident, but it wasn't like, you know, overbearing confidence where he could, he would try to go all in against Wilder. So it wasn't like, he was going to be swinging for the fences or trying to, you know, get as many power punches in as he can. He was trying to, you know, just go in with the jab and then set up with the jab and then do a couple of power punches here and there to, you know, be able to try to get into Wilder. It was nothing like he was, you know, trying to set up for a counter or anything like that, or, you know, kind of like bait Wilder in. So he kind of like stuck to one single game plan and stuck with it. And, you know, while it was, you know, very successful, it also, you know, opened him up to huge counters. And that, I think, pretty much kind of did him in against Deontay Wilder. So he can't really, you know, be that type of fighter. I don't think he can really be that type of fighter against Jarrell Miller here in this case. So kind of like looking forward to, you know, seeing what happens there. And with the Jermall Charlo and Joe Sebastian Hedlund fight, I mean, I think this is something where Charlo is going to be able to get his feet wet in the middleweight division and then be able to see if he could, you know, blow right through Sebastian Hedlund, or, you know, kind of like take his time and seeing how he feels within the middleweight division, taking a couple of punches here and there. But I'm not certain or sure that Hedlund would be, you know, a good barometer to say what point Charlo would be in at the middleweight division. He'll probably need like a couple more fights here and there, you know, with guys with the likes of Daniel Jacobs in there, Sergio Moore in there, among others. So kind of like seeing him as being something where he's kind of like, you know, putting one foot into the middleweight division to see how it is.
Yeah, I'm going to get one more comment on the Miller-Washington fight. So
okay.
So you said you don't think that he should take that like cautious, you know, too reserve approach. But I think depending on how Miller's wind is, that might bode him well.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Provided
got
he
a point there.
By then,
good point.
Then crazy. But if Miller ain't got no win, then if he pace himself, then he could be able to drown Miller later. Because don't Miller fade? Well, don't they both fade? But I could have sworn I saw one of Miller's fights where it looked like he was fading, I feel like.
Well, it's like, you know, maybe you got that idea because, I mean, Miller kind of like comes in. So Miller came into some of his fights pretty heavy. So, you know, if he comes in pretty heavy, then Gerald Washington could take the fight, you know, to a good amount of distance and then see, you know, how Miller's conditioning is, you know, later on in the fight. You know, if it's able to get to, you know, rounds 8 and 9, see if he could, you know, be able to keep up with Gerald Washington there at that point. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, with Washington being that, you know, pretty big guy himself, but, you know, he's pretty tall there. I think he's taller than Miller, about, you know, 6'6", going up against somebody at 6'4", and has a, distinct reach advantage of 4 inches. So if he's able to, you know, execute the game plan that he was able to do against Deontay Wilder, that might work out, you know, fairly well for him.
Yeah, 4 inches. Yeah, he shouldn't get too much. If he, like you said, views what he did against Wilder, because I mean the jab was winning against Wilder.
Yeah, it was. It was. So I mean that's something where that could work later on for him in that particular fight. You know.
Yeah. Give me 1 second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna switch things up here a little bit while you take a little break. That pretty much like covers what's going on at the Barclays Center next week. You know, it'll be a good fight card there on Showtime, so that people could tune into that, and I think that, you know, kind of gets people to respond to the week that we just had where there really wasn't much going on. Moving into the next week where we get into the first Saturday of August, it'll be the next telecast for Top Rank on ESPN. That will be at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles, headlined by the WBO Super Featherweight Championship fight between Vasyl Lomachenko defending it against Miguel Mariaga, and also have Raymundo Beltran and Brian Vasquez as the co-feature on that particular fight. So Vasyl Lomachenko, you know, was had that date locked down to be featured on one of those top-ranked telecasts on the ESPN. People were thinking that it would be against Orlando Salido, but Salido eventually pulled himself out of that fight for, you know, various reasons. And insert Miguel Mariaga, somebody that, you know, was coming in there that, you know, was coming up. He's moving up in weight. He was a, you know, minor featherweight champion in 2016, and then he challenged for the WBO featherweight championship in April of this year against Oscar Valdez and ended up losing a unanimous decision. He's also, you know, lost to Nicholas Walters, who, you know, was a guy that Vasyl Lomachenko basically schooled earlier in his career. So this is basically a filler fight, not to the level of a potential rematch between Lomachenko and Orlando Salido, but it's something to where, you know, more people who have access to ESPN in comparison to HBO is going to be able to see Vasyl Lomachenko in action, and it's going to be another opportunity to see how this ESPN telecast looks in the eyes of the public. As you know, even though you had that result between Manny Pacquiao and Jeff Horn, where, you know, Horn was able to get the decision win, there was also a lot of criticism about the way that the ESPN telecast was covered. So That's kind of like what I'm looking into here with this next telecast here on August 5th before they have the next one coming up between Terrence Crawford and Julius Ndongo. So any quick thoughts about Vasyl Lomachenko and his point of his career? Because there's like also been something else that's been talked about in reference to Vasyl Lomachenko that isn't necessarily part of this fight. So you kind of like looking at anything here in this fight card?
If this is the guy that I remember, it should be a fairly easy win, like, you know, like moderate win for Lomachenko.
Yeah.
And I think that putting him on ESPN is good, you know, because, you know, he going to definitely let his hands go. And Mariaga if I remember correctly, he's there to be hit, right?
Yeah, he's kind of there to be hit. And he's kind of like, you know, opening himself up to, you know, a lot of things. But like I was saying, he lost his previous fight in the featherweight division when he took on, you know, when he was taking on the, when he was trying to get that featherweight championship there. So my thing is that, you know, when he fought Oscar Valdez, Valdez is, you know, able to get that unanimous decision win. And, you know, Valdez is, you know, kind of like a fairly good fighter there. But, you know, he hasn't really, you know, done that much in the featherweight division up to this point, other than, you know, getting that WBO title last year. So, you know, my thing is, I don't think that Mariaga is going to be able to do that much here against Vasyl Lomachenko, especially when it's in the super featherweight division.
Yeah, I'm hoping Rigondeaux come and talk English in the ring and talk smack to maybe coax a fight out of Lomachenko.
Yeah, that would be something that I would want to see too, because they've been like talking a lot of trash here over the past few weeks or so. We got like a caller in here that was on hold for a little while. Area code 202. What's going on with you?
What's going on in this world, right? Checking in. Slow weekend. But just want to hear what's going on in the boxing world. I hear y'all was talking about Lomachenko and his fight with Mariaga. Mariaga coming up, like you guys said, coming off a loss, and then moving up in weight. It's just another instance of top rank, you know, staying in house. You know, Lomachenko, you know, could have went a different route, but they, you know, they want to keep it. They want to keep things in house. Mariaga is somebody that fight fans have kind of recognized. He's been in a couple of fights on TV. He's only lost to good fighters, Walters and Valdez. The Valdez fight was actually pretty good. He actually gave Valdez a real good test. You know, one of those, I guess when you transfer from a prospect to a real contender, and I think Valdez passed the test. But he was in tough, and Valdez gave him a tough time. But again, Mariaga's moving up in weight. I don't know how much he could present a challenge to the skilled Lomachenko. And also, you guys mentioned the Rigo fight. I mean, I'm not entertained in it because Rigo will be moving up two weights. I mean, it's been said that Lomachenko's not going to move down, back down. So I don't know how good Rigo could be at that weight. Yes, it's a name. It's a very talented name. But sometimes just because your name doesn't mean that the fight will be, you know, good.
Yeah, that's you know, interesting to say that is that he doesn't, you know, necessarily. I mean, it's something where, you know, a lot of fight fans have been like requesting it, but it's just got to be at the point of you know, I would say Rigo's career, where is he going to be able to be comfortable moving up in weight to the weight level or the weight class that Lomachenko is in, and that's just something that is an unknown by a lot of people there. So,
how-wise, Mariaga's
yeah,
fight,
I'm not sure
Mariaga's
what
style.
Do.
I actually think Mariaga's style is better suited. It's a better fight visually in the eyes than a Rigo Lomo. Not taking nothing away from Rigo. He's a great fighter, but at some point, your level that won't necessarily match up, you know, in weight. And he says now he can really make 118. So, I mean, doing 130, I mean, I don't know how much. And do he, you know, do you really want to see him at a disadvantage at that weight, never fighting at that weight, and then having to move up to the division to basically fight maybe the best guy in the division?
I don't know, because at 118, he breaking people's faces and stuff. So, who knows?
I mean, he's getting knocked down, too. I mean, Rigo has been knocked down by Cordova. He was knocked down in the fight that you mentioned. I mean, when he gets clipped, so it's not like, you know, he can be hit, and that's part of that's the intrigue of it. He is somewhat not defensive. He's not a liability defensively, but he can be touched, and he's been knocked down at least five times. I actually personally thought he lost the Cordova fight. It was a while ago, but he's a talent. I'm not taking anything away from him. He's a great fighter, but it's not like he's not unbeatable even at that weight. Yes, he's breaking people, you know, jaws and things of that nature, but in that same fight, he got dropped. I mean, he is a talent, and, you know, he should be calling out these big-level fighters, but I don't know if 130 is too deep.
And so the times right. where you saw him getting dropped, was he really hurt, or was it he was – being too offensively minded because of all the chatter that says he's boring, et cetera, this whole narrative, and then he try to do this whole offensive engagement, and then he get, like, caught off balance or something like that. Like, has he ever been, like, righteously hurt to you when he got knocked down?
Hurt? No, but I guess when you get hurt, when you get hit once and you get knocked down, you can say, okay, it's a flash knockdown. You get hit twice, you can even say it. Three times, you can even say it. But he's been knocked down several times. It's, I would equivalent it to the Gamboa, what Gamboa was getting knocked down, how he was. I would equate it to that. Not in his last fight, but previously before that. The way that Gamboa was getting knocked down, where those were flash knockdowns, but he was still getting hit. It's similar to that in the Rigondeaux. He can be so offense, what's the word for it, where he can be so much in charge, he kind of loses his focus, and then, you know, he gets caught.
Mm-hmm. So, like, if he's able to get, you know, caught with good counters, then that could, you know, really get him in trouble.
But I don't think he would do that against a fighter that he know has the tools to hurt him. Like, he would probably, I don't know what he would do in the fight, because I mean, I think he would have to do offense in the fight to win. He couldn't win off of just straight defense. But I guess offense could be countering too. But yeah, that'd be a
here's something that, you know, I kind of like thought about, and this has like kind of been you know, part of the conversation that I had on Facebook. I think Terrell was the one that like kind of brought up the question of, you know, who was the faster fighter? Was it Lomachenko? Was it Gary Russell Jr.? And I said that, you know, while their hand speed might be, a little bit equal, Lomachenko moves in and out of the pocket a lot better than Gary Russell Jr. does, in my opinion. He's, you know, more able to, you know, use angles to move to the left and move to the right with much more confidence than Gary Russell Jr. And I think that if this, you know, matchup was going to be able to happen, I think the same thing would kind of be evident in this fight, because I don't see Guillermo Rigondeaux at this stage of his career where he's going to be able to move inside and outside of the pocket to counter the mobility that Lomachenko has.
And so while he probably does not have the in and out mobility of Lomachenko, I do think that his, like, I can't even call it steel, because when you see him dodging punches, even though it's like repetitive motion for him, he's able to, for the most part, like, notice people's rhythms, and then from the rhythm, he take like a small step over, and then like by that time he done threw his punch, and then he's countered you. Like it's like his ability to see the rhythm or something. Like it just is. Yeah, he's not a better.
I mean, he immediately saw it in his last fight there, where, you know, he had that technical decision. And it was just that one round, and within that one round, he was able to predict, you know, what the guy was going to be able to do, and then he came back with counter after counter after counter. So he studies his opponent very, very well, and You know, that would be the intriguing thing here, you know, between him and Lomachenko is if Rigondeaux is gonna would it be able to figure out what Lomachenko's tendencies are.
And so, but, like I was saying, he's not a better dancer than Lomachenko, like feet-wise, as far as, like, in out movement like that. He's not that, but I think that his ability to, like, you've noticed the tendencies. Like, I'm sure Lomachenko will do something bad.
He nullifies their offense, opponent's offense. But in that, will he have the punching power to at 130 to hurt Lomachenko? Because if he fights the style that he fought against Donaire, fighting from the outside, I don't think he can beat Lomachenko in a boxing match. I truly don't. As great as Rigo is, I don't think he has the punching power, nor he has the I didn't see his last fight, so I don't know what type of speed. I think he still has elite speed, but I don't know what happens to him when he gets touched. I mean, I've seen him when he gets touched, and it's not – he doesn't react greatly to it. Donaire was not able to hit him, and that was the problem. But then how many years ago was that? When was the last time Rigo was in a 50-50 fight? So we always go back to when he looked his best. But who has he fought since then? While Lomachenko was, he has more world champions on his resume than he has regular fighters. Think about that. He has more world champions on his record than he has regular fighters. That's a great fighter. Say it again.
Yeah. Who has the world? Say your statement one more time. Say
Lomachenko. Lomachenko has more world champions than he has regular fighters on his resume. So he's beating more world champions than he has regular fighters.
Well, and it's maybe like 8-2 or something, like 6-4. Like how many?
So he has like nine wins or 10 wins or something like that. Six or five of those were current or former world champions at some point. So that's saying he is beating more world champions than he's beating regular fighters. If you add both of them together, he has beaten like five former or current world champions, where he's only had like two or three wins over non-champions. So this guy isn't fighting, you know, he's not fighting bums. He's fighting, you know, he had his first fight as a professional, and he wanted that to be a world championship fight. The sanctioning bodies didn't allow it, so they gave him a 10-round tune-up in his first fight. His second fight, he's fighting for a world championship. Unfortunately, he lost that. Some people thought he won. Some people, whatever. But he lost that fight. Then you fight Gary Russell. Not similar in Rigondeaux, but possesses similar skills. You know, Walter, you know, he beat Rocky Martinez, I think. I think he beat somebody else as the world champion, too. He just beat guys. You know, he's not going to Japan and fighting guys. He's not fighting a guy we never heard of from Mexico, who on his record looks great, but when you're getting starts in one round by Rigondeaux, how good is your record? I mean, again, Rigondeaux is great, but he hasn't since Donaire. His opponent could be questioned.
And you think that's his fault that people are trying to fight him after they see people's faces getting broken?
Nah, it's a similar thing to Triple G. Just because, you know, you can see how good he is, but the opponents just aren't there. You can always have that doubt. Well, you know, the opponents are not there for whatever reason. And like you said, it's not his fault. But again, who face did he break? If you say that guy's name, nobody would know him. You know what I'm saying? So breaking people's faces or breaking somebody's jaw is that, who is it? You know what I'm saying? Just saying that you did that, you know. People, you know, in a fight game, do that a lot. People get their jaw broken a lot on the highest level and on the lowest level. So if you say, oh, well, who chin did he break? And then you say his name. Well, who is that?
Yeah. Because, I mean, we just had that fight that you were mentioning there, Mike, between Joe Smith and Sullivan Barrera, where Joe Smith got his jaw broken in the second round and fought the rest of the fight with a broken jaw. So that, you know, kind of goes to that point. We like just hit the overtime section of the show, but I might even want to circle back a little bit on, you know, what we were talking about earlier, you know, since World Rank just got in there. Before you got in there, kind of like preview the fight card between Adrian Broner and Mikey Garcia. And I was saying that, you know, I'm kind of leaning towards Mikey Garcia to win this fight. So I was saying, what your thoughts would be on it?
I'm picking Broner. I don't know. I mean, when I first saw this fight, I saw the Vegas line, and it was Garcia was like an 8-1 favorite, something crazy. So I put a little money on Broner. I'm not biased. I just think at that price where he was like it was 5-1. So you put $100 down, you went $500 at that time. I looked at it today. He's only a 2-1 underdog. Which means if you put $100, you only get $200 back. So the line has went down considerably. A lot of people question, is Broner going to make the weight? Now people are backtracking, saying he's going to make the weight. I don't know if he's going to make the weight. For his sake, I hope he does. Garcia, just to me, as good as he looks, he doesn't have three. He doesn't have a second gear. He doesn't have another gear. He stays in the same gear no matter what the fight is. And to me, he seems like the guy that, Will at some point you'll be like, well, why he didn't let his hands go enough? And I can see Adrian Broner outworking.
Yeah. My thing was is that Garcia kind of, you know, looks for something first before going all in. He kind of like paces himself pretty well at most of his fights. It's just that he doesn't, you know, be too overly aggressive to where you can see that he's, you know, open to a lot of counters or a lot of mistakes. But it's not like he's, you know, very active to the point where he's either throwing a lot of punches per round or he's throwing a lot of power punches in the round there. So, but I kind of like sided with Garcia because, you know, I think that like Broner's style to me is that where he's kind of waiting too long to do something against his opponent. And it was, like, very evident against in his last fight against Adrian Granados where it kind of, like, looked like he was waiting for Granados to be first instead of him being first to begin with. Because if he was first to begin with, I think he could have, you know, really done something against Granados and probably could have won that fight by knockout if he wanted to. So that's my overall assessment on that.
Let me ask a question in terms of the weight. Did you guys think there would be a weight advantage or disadvantage for either one of the guys?
I don't know. I would have thought it would be Broner, but my thing is, would Broner kind of do something in order to use that weight as an advantage? You know, like either try to, you know, smother Garcia up to try to get him tired early or, you know, kind of use it as something to where he's able to use power and, you know, be more active and try to, you know, get to Garcia first in order to do, you know, significant damage against him. You know, with that weight thing, it's still like a lot of unknowns with that being, you know, added to it.
And another, because I'm of a conspiracy theory thought, and I'm thinking to me, how would boxing fare if Broner gets knocked out? I don't know if we're gaining a bigger star if Mikey Garcia wins. I just don't see, it probably sounds stupid, but I don't see the value of Broner losing, especially by knockout. A lot of people picking Garcia by knockout. To me, I'm fairly certain. I'm not certain, but I'll be surprised if Garcia knocks him out. This is because I don't see where Broner's a star in boxing. He's one of the guys that the African American community follows. If he gets knocked out, I don't know. I just don't know how that sits well.
How that helps from it's like you were saying, you know, it's like your Twitter handle, Boxing is a business. And business-wise, having Adrian Broner win this fight against Mikey Garcia is like more lucrative to the overall sport in general than Mike Garcia is. What I was saying, you know, in the earlier segment is that, you know, with Mikey Garcia, there might be a few more matchups that he could take either in the 140-pound or the 135-pound division, but they wouldn't be bigger on the lucrative side than if Broner won and he was able to get a potential fight against Terrence Crawford at 140 or any of the, you know, guys in 147, the Mikey Garcias, the Lamont Bissons, the a rematch against Sean Porter, you know, or against Keith Thurman. You know, that would be a lot more lucrative to the sport than having Mikey Garcia out there who, you know, while he would still be undefeated if he won, there really wouldn't be that much immediate matches that could be put together where the general public would be interested in it, and it being like a main event type of fight.
Yeah, it sounds silly, but I think, you know, that not that, you know, every fight is fixed or anything like that, but I think sometimes that serves the element. And the same thing with the Triple G Canelo thing. I just think, like, the KO aspect of it, I just don't think it sits well with the sport. You know, you look at the Mayweather-Canelo result, and you see you get majority decision when it was clearly unanimous. It just seems to horn and pack out. It just seems other fight game to just, you know, it just has you thinking.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was one thing that you did mention there with you know, Canelo and Golovkin that, you know, I might want to touch on a little bit is that, you know, a lot that this is supposed to be the quote unquote biggest fight, you know, in boxing for this year, but to me, I just don't see the overall. I mean, well, me personally, I'm not necessarily excited about it, but my thing is that, one, you've kind of like waited for this fight for almost 2 years now between Canelo and Golovkin, and it would have been the same case if Cotto won that fight against Canelo. I kind of think that it would have been the same way that Cotto would, you know, do the same thing that Canelo did in order to prolong the fight, number one. And then number two, after the result, what is next that's out there? It's almost like, you know, they're saying, one, Golovkin is, you know, kind of getting up there in age, and there really isn't, you know, much else out there in the middleweight division for him to do when, you know, clearly there's still, you know, I mean, if Jermell Charlo wins next weekend, there's still that where he's able to have that defense. And there's, you know, a rematch with Daniel Jacobs because a lot of people thought Daniel Jacobs won that fight, you know, on one side. And then the other side is Canelo, where it's like if Canelo wins, then what else is there, you know, other than a Billy Joe Saunders fight or something where it's like an in-house fight against David Lemieux? Because he's not going to fight Charlo or Jacobs, you know, one or the other. Neither one of them definitely aren't going to happen. So it's almost like for both fighters, this is basically the peak of their careers right here, and then there's nothing else left for them. So whether you get a good fight between those two, a close fight between those two, or whatever it is, you know, what else is out there other than those matchups or possibly a rematch, which, you know, I'm not necessarily sure if they even had that as part of the contract.
It's certainly a business, and, you know, people, not the actual fighters, but the people that look out for them, they look out for the business aspect first. You know, they don't have the same mindset as we do as boxing fans of seeing the best. They want to, their goal is to support their fighter and protect them as well. So that's a big part of the game.
And, you know, also, yeah, make as much money, you know, within that process. You know, if they're able to, you know, get the money out of it, that's something that they kind of like add to it as well, as part of being the overall objective for their fighters. Mike Grady, you got anything to add to the thing with Canelo and Golovkin?
I was like semi-listening, but I mean, I think it's gonna be a good fight. I'm looking forward to it. Can we talk?
Kind of like trying to see.
Can we talk about my boy Deontay Wilder always getting people on drugs? Can we talk about that?
What do you mean people on drugs?
So it looks like
you're talking about this thing here with LeBron. He missed the test.
Right.
Yeah, he missed the test here for WBC's clean boxing program regimen. He was like among, you know, one of the few guys that missed the test. So I'm not sure, you know, what happens with that. They haven't, like the WBC hasn't necessarily made the decision on it. I don't know if, you know, he would be suspended or, you know, anything like that. You know, kind of like in comparison to Shannon Briggs, who was suspended for 6 months or, you know, whatever. But, you know, he still has something, you know, he's still up in the air as far as like who's his next opponent is going to be. You know, there was talk about him fighting Ortiz. There's been talk about him fighting Dillon White. But, you know, that thing there against Vermont Stavern is still out there, where he has to make that obligation to fight Stavern. And so, you know, whether, you know, he missed the test or whatever it is, there should have been an immediate decision by the WBC that says, hey, Vermont Stavern, you missed this test. If you missed this test, then you can't have that mandatory position. But it's like the WBC has kind of like been, you know, fidgety in reference to that whole mandatory situation, and has been so, you know, ever since the first ordeal with Alexander Povetkin went down, you know. So I'm not sure what's going to be, you know, coming out of that, because for one, you know, they haven't been clear about what Vermont Stavern missing the test means, and for two, the WB themselves haven't really been upfront or straightforward as to what their decisions were going to be, because, you know, after the whole thing with Alexander Povetkin, they try to get him back in the game and say, hey, you won a shot at Deontay Wilder, you got to face Vermont Stavern, and then Povetkin failed the test again. And then Stavern was elevated as number one contender. Then the WBC said, you know, while Stavern is number one contender, he still has to fight a final eliminator who was going to be against Luis Ortiz, which they put at number two, and that fight still didn't happen. And so now Stavern is, you know, still sitting there at number one right now. So WBC hasn't really made any clear-cut decision on what happens here with, you know, Deontay Wilder and Vermont Stavern. Really haven't done anything yet. Like, there hasn't been, like, any negotiations, purse bid, anything like that, as far as I know.
Nobody wants to see the Stavern fight. Like, only thing that's going to happen is Stavern is going to get hurt worse than he did last time. I'd rather
Mike Grady, that means that he can take that that $4 million Dillon White offered him if Stavern is dirty.
That means that he can take the $4 million that Dillon White offered him if Stavern what now?
If he's dirty. So that opens up the fight for him if he wants to take it. If he wants to challenge it, Eddie Hearn said it's $4 million right there for him.
I mean, maybe so. I don't think the Dillon White
thing was didn't
too much tougher than the Stavern fight.
Hold on, what you were saying there, Mike Grady?
I don't think the Dillon White fight is going to be too much tougher than the Stavern fight.
Well, it might not be too much tougher than the Stavern fight, but it'll be, you know, one, it'll be much more lucrative, one, and two, more people will be interested in the fight, especially with it being in England. That means, you know, a lot more international eyes will be on Deontay Wilder in that particular fight. So, I mean, to him, it would make more sense if he's able to go ahead and take that fight, you know, as soon as possible. But the thing about it is that Wasn't Dylan White supposed to be a part of the fight card that's coming up real soon? I think
I'm not
sure. Wait, hold on.
He's supposed to be on that Terrence Crawford card.
Yeah, the Terrence Crawford, Julius Ndongo fight card. Yeah. So, you know, with him being in that, then I don't know, you know, how they're going to be able to put that fight together between Wilder and White unless it's going to be later on in the year. Remember that, you know, other floating rumor that was floating around was that Wilder was going to be trying to get a deal between him and Luis Ortiz for November 4th. But we don't know how much traction that fight is going to get because, you know, Ortiz is saying the manager on his team said he didn't get anything from Wilder's team in reference to that fight potentially happening. So I'm not sure how that's going to sort itself out.
If you guys had to guess who Wilder's next opponent is, who would you say?
I mean, they're talking about Ortiz.
Man. You
but
say it's Taverna Ortiz?
He said if we had to guess, who would it be? I'm saying that everyone's talking about Ortiz as being the next opponent. I'm pretty sure they're going to do what they can, especially since Taverna missed this drug test, that they're not going to let him fight. Because, I mean, people ain't going to – like, which – who's going to actually host
that
fight?
Well, the thing about it is – yeah – and, I mean, I get the whole thing with the interest, but if I was Deontay Wilder in this case, then I would force the hand of the WBC to make a concrete decision on what they're going to do with Bermont Severn. And the reason is that, you know, all of us know that he would have more lucrative fights if he's able to fight Dylan White or Luis Ortiz than a Bermont Severn. So my thing would be is, okay, World Boxing Council, tell me what the real deal is. Is Bermont Severn still my mandatory? And if he is, let's get a fight done as soon as possible so that if I win that, then I could go against, you know, other guys that are ranked in the division. And if he's not the number one contender, then tell me now so that I could just go ahead and get a fight against Ortiz or Dylan White or whatever it is, because right now the heavyweight division is pretty much in a basic stalemate other than the WBO title. I mean, we only know that, you know, Joseph Parker is going up against Yuri Fury. Vladimir Klitschko hasn't made it official if he's going to, you know, go ahead and have that rematch against Anthony Joshua yet. And, you know, with that being known, then Joshua would be tied up because he'd have mandatories that it has to oblige to before he could even think about a unification. So,
and didn't,
for Wilder's
Ortiz,
sake,
Joshua's mandatory?
Yeah, Ortiz is Joshua's mandatory in the WBA, and you have Kubrat Pulev for the IBF.
Okay.
So, yeah, so with Wilder, I go ahead and say, hey, WBC, tell me what the deal is. Who am I going to fight? Who am I able to fight? Is Severn available or not? And just let me know.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing Wilder knock out Ortiz, though. Or Dylan White.
Oh, we hit. Well, we had to see what the deal is, but for me, on Ortiz's end, I'd get a fight with somebody one way or another because, you know, his time is, you know, kind of being limited there. And, I mean, he was supposed to have a fight in April, and he couldn't make that fight because of injury. So he's got to, you know, get something done to where he's going to be able to, you know, put himself on the spotlight or, you know, be able to get a fight against the title holder or his time to go on to basically run out on that. So with that, I'll pretty much, you know, put a close to this episode of the show. We'll get I started once again here next week, July 30th, where we're going to see what happens between Adrian Broner and Mikey Garcia, plus the heavyweight fight between Jarrell Big Baby Miller and Gerald Washington, among others. So be sure to catch the show here next Sunday, 7:30 Eastern time. And like I say, at the end of every show, point of boxing is a hit, not a hit, not the same trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening.